Hey everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Snake Oilers podcast. I'm Patrick Gray. And this is the podcast series we do here at Risky.biz, where vendors pay to appear to spruik their stuff in a non-marketroidy sort of way. I honestly think this is the best one of these we've done yet. We're going to be launching a startup in a minute. And if you're a CISO with any large public attack surface, you're really going to want to hear about that one. We are launching AssetNote.io. That's an asset identification and vulnerability scanning platform that finds things you didn't even know your company had online in cloud environments and then scans them for RCEs and all sorts of stuff. Then we're going to hear from Pedram Armini of Inquest. They make a box that reassembles files from network packets captured off the wire or funneled in through ICAP or however you want to get them there. But then it rips those files to bits looking for badness. They call it deep file inspection, and it is a great way to supplement client-side detection at scale. You can even pass these reassembled files onto multi-AV or cloud services. You can use this platform to do a spot of threat hunting. It's very powerful stuff, and honestly, that's an interview that got me thinking in a new way about detection concepts. And then finally, we'll be joined by Umaru Maruatona of Aculus. Umaru has a PhD in applying machine learning to bank fraud that he obtained while working for one of the big four banks here in Australia. After that, he moved on to PwC as a pen tester, and now he's running Aculus. They make an API proxy that uses machine learning to detect funky calls. So if you're not satisfied that your API gateway has you completely covered, then yeah, you're going to want to listen to that one. So all in all, we've got three very interesting conversations for you this week, but we are going to kick off now by introducing all of you to AssetNote. Now, this is a technology we've spoken about on the show before. We even had a feature interview featuring Lord Tuskington and Shubham Shah. Shubs is well known in Australia for being one of the most successful bug bounty hunters in the game. Him and his friend and bounty-seeking colleague, Nathaniel Wakelam, have pulled down something like $1 million in bounties over the last few years. And the reason they've been so successful is because of a tool Shubham developed with input from Nathaniel. That tool is now called AssetNote, and Shubham and his co-founder, Michael Giannarakis, are releasing it today through this podcast. Now, before I go any further, I want to make it crystal clear that I have a business relationship with these guys. I'm coming on as an advisor, you know, options package, commissions, the full nine yards. I think they've done a tremendous job with the tech, and I'm getting very involved with this company. And now I'm going to tell you why. Put simply, the AssetNote platform represents the next generation in vulnerability scanning and external attack surface measurement. The reason for that is clear. This was a tool developed by a bug bounty hunter for the purpose of finding real, actual security issues that A, you don't know about, and B, will actually get you owned. This isn't a scanner that'll tell you that a user can force a null cipher on a TLS connection or that your security headers aren't properly configured. It's not some service that gives you some sort of weird macro idea about risk in air quotes. It is designed to find your weak links, and it is very bloody good at it, and it operates at incredible scale. So this is a platform or a scanner that you point at your company, and it tells you things like, hey, there's an RCE on this box or cloud asset over here. This is an asset you didn't even know was on the internet. Hell, you might not have even known that it existed until AssetNote found it. Or it might come back with a finding that says, hey, there is a brutable admin panel on this box over here that you probably didn't know was on the internet, or here's a cloud asset or a dangling domain running a framework that is commonly associated with vulnerabilities, or hey, look at this server, this one over here, it just smells bad. So the old days of throwing Nessus at your IP range are gone because everything's gone cloud. And while vulnerability scanning companies allow you to take information from, say, your AWS API to identify assets for scanning, that only covers the official provisioned assets, the corporately sanctioned ones. AssetNote doesn't work that way. It's a very powerful platform that does passive and active discovery using some insanely clever tricks that these guys are keeping secret. But I promise you, they've thought of some really tricky to make this thing hum. And the bugs, holy God, the bugs I've seen this thing find. You know, if you ever wonder why there's only a handful of bounty people who seem to make 90% of the cash, it's because they're really good at asset identification and automation. I've personally watched Shubs rip a fortune out of Uber over a few hours at TuskCon by finding an asset that just should not have been online. And believe me when I say this, Uber's exposure on that one was very real. Now, honestly, when you're done listening to this, I would encourage you to book a demo, and these guys will run their scanning engine against your public assets, and they will turn up stuff that will make your hair stand on end. Companies that run big bounty programs will likely be the first customers here, simply because by running this tool, they'll be able to clean out the stuff that shouldn't be on the internet in the first place, because that's, honestly, that's where a lot of their bug bounty budgets get blown. But beyond that, companies that are interested in measuring vendor risk in a real way, not in the way that some other scanning and reputation companies do it, but in a real way, they'll be interested in this too. And any company that has a lot of cloud assets, them too. This is really great stuff. Asset Note co-founder Michael Giannarakis joined me to talk about their all-singing, all-dancing new platform, AssetNote.io, and here's what he had to say.
So really, the core of Asset Note is really about, you know, surfacing what you need to know as soon as you can, right? When you need to know it, and you know, for a company, right? You know, getting a handle on your risk by mapping out your entire attack surface and then constantly monitoring it for security issues is valuable, but also valuable when, you know, you're using a lot of vendors, right? So, you know, nowadays, you know, you outsource a lot, you know, outsource a lot to different cloud vendors, and, you know, they present a risk. You're giving them access to your stuff. It's out there on the internet. And in the same way that you would use Asset Note for yourself, people are wanting to use this for vendors, right? And, you know, you talk about security scorecard, BitSight, and things like that. You know, I think one of the areas that we really differentiate is we look at your entire attack surface and we map that out continuously on a continuous basis. And we also run what I call the high impact security checks, right? You mentioned that this was born out of the bug bounty space and, you know, they don't pay out for stuff that doesn't have any security impact, right? So we're really conscious about what we put in our scanner and what we put in our security engine, because one, it has to scale to, you know, 5, 6, 10,000 assets, right? So you can't fill it with fluff, but also you don't want to be notified all the time about, you know, it's something that, you know, doesn't really matter, right? So
the way I describe it is like they've got something like 300 signatures, but they're the 300 things that are going to get you owned.
Yeah,
you know, like exactly. It's just such a real world tool.
Yeah, exactly. And it's because it's been tuned by, you know, from that sort of bug bounty space where, you know, everything that you have to do, you have to prove impact, you have to show impact. Otherwise, you don't get paid, right? And you know, it's really about, you know, finding stuff that, oh, you know, I didn't know about this. This has an impact. I better fix it now. We're not, you know, throwing out a bunch of like TLS filler issues or anything like that, because who cares, right? Is that actually being exploited in the world?
Yeah, you can force a null cipher. It's like, do I give a shit? Get out of my console, right?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody cares about that. And it's not even that relevant of a risk. And the other thing about a lot of those scanners, right, is they're not really application aware, because that's really where it's at in terms of your attack surface, right? It's application issues. And you know, that's where your information is. That's where your sensitive, you know, sensitive stuff that you want to protect is. That's what your sort of external access, I suppose, into your systems now, which are all cloud systems pretty much, right? And you know, you want to be able to protect that, and so you need to find issues that are going to affect that. Legacy sort of issues, they're not really that relevant anymore, right? They're not actually producing any kind of impact. And so we're very conscious about, you know, what we put into our recon engine, what we put into our security engine, to make sure that what's coming back from Asset Note is you look at that and you see, actually, I do need to take action.
Yeah,
on
you
that.
Look at that and a brown stain forms, right? Like that's the whole purpose of this thing. And as you rightly point out, this came from the bug bounty world. This is a tool that a bug bounty person made to do bug bounties and to identify issues that were going to pay them, right? So, you know, with that in mind, we should point out too that these signatures and these scan types, they have varying levels of aggression depending on how you set it. Is that right? Or is it these days it's standardized into just one offering in that sense?
No. There are different levels of aggression and, I guess, activeness, as we term, in terms of like how deeply we go in terms of sending data to these applications and to these systems. Because you pointed out earlier this whole concept of a smell, right, or an indicator. And, you know, obviously there's a bunch of vulnerabilities that are easy to sort of prove to say, hey, you've got RCE, you've got, you know, SSRF, you've got this. Then there's a bunch of other vulnerabilities or a bunch of other issues that when you take them together, it's like, hey, this kind of smells bad, right? This is something I need to look at. And, you know, if I was a, you know, bug hunter, you know, part of the reason why we have that is that's an asset that I want to target. That's an asset that I want to look at because, you know, it's got a bunch of this, you know, it's leaking information, it's leaking keys, it's, you know, got a bunch of administrative functionality exposed. And you get this kind of really solid indicator that, you know, that there's an issue there. Now we can go the next step and, you know, try and, you know, brute force things, do more, some more active checks. But obviously we leave that, you know, to the discretion of the customer, right? What they're comfortable with.
Now I noticed that you've come up with a very polished interface for this. I mean, as we mentioned, this did start off as one person's tool that would be shared, you know, with a few friends, and they'd sit around with a six pack and just make ridiculous amounts of money using it to do bug bounties. But you've wound up tacking a pretty sophisticated UI onto this, and you've even added these, you know, enterprise features, right? Like you've got integration for SSO and all of that stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't treat AssetNode as a black box, right? Most of our customers want to take the information that AssetNode finds and pipe into their existing processes, right? Whether they're using Jira or Splunk or something else, they want to be able to access that. So we do have that those features and that functionality. And also we wanted to express the results that we had in a meaningful way that you could get that kind of at a glance view of what's my current state. What's needing attention right now? You know, what do I need to know about?
And you've come up with something that I think is brilliant, which is just this color-coded calendar, right? So you can look at the month and see the days that you were green, the days that you were orange, and the days that you were red, right? To give an idea of your exposure over time historically and then compare that to the current day.
And that's one of the great things about taking all of this information and building that historical information is you can start to get some trends. And that's some of the things that we've highlighted in the UI. So you can see things like your regression rate, which is unfortunately really common when you're looking at large attack surfaces where, hey, I've fixed this vulnerability, but 2 months later, it's been reintroduced. Because we've got the history of the asset, you can track those regressions. You can track how quickly you're triaging issues. You can find ephemeral vulnerabilities, which are, you know, vulnerabilities that exist for only a certain period of time, but you're actually exposed for that certain period of time.
Oh man. I mean, you know, I've seen, I wasn't there at the moment, but I did see him that day. I saw when Shubs got a Slack notification from this tool that resulted in him cloning a Git repo belonging to a major online brand, and he had all of their source. And that's, you know, that was an ephemeral bug. It was someone spinning up a Docker container or something where they shouldn't, and that was that.
Yeah, exactly. And that particular bug was only open for a week. It was only available for a week. But because we're looking at it continuously, we're able to see that exposure and capitalize on that. And that bug paid out pretty well. So, you know, we're able to get all of their internal source code, as you say, kind of keys to the kingdom for a major online brand, right? And I'm sure these guys spend a lot of money on security. Certainly, they spend a lot of money on their bug bounty. And, you know, this kind of stuff happens,
well,
right?
And you know, I would also say that, you know, of the companies doing bug bounties and investing heavily there, I mean, this is something that to me seems sensible to do. If you're hosing serious cash on a bug bounty program, you might want to just use this tool to clean up stuff that you don't really want in scope, stuff that shouldn't be on the internet in the first place, right? Are you getting much interest from people wanting to use it to do that?
Actually, quite a lot of our early interest has been from companies that run existing bug bounties for that exact reason, right? You know, they've got an acquisition that they didn't know about that's in scope. They've got
some hideously vulnerable box that should never be on the internet that's going to result in like 100K of bounty payments, right?
Exactly.
People rip into it.
Exactly. So there was one bounty that we're working with for a very major brand, electronics brand. And, you know, we loaded some stuff into AssetNote and we found a bunch of stuff on this Chinese site that wasn't managed by the security team. It was managed by their Chinese subsidiary. And we pulled like 25 criticals of that in one night. They actually had to take it off and, you know, have a chat to us about how much they're able to pay out from that because we kind of killed their budget just with that one night, just by finding these assets that were out there, right? So if they'd run Asset Note beforehand, they would have been able to see that and be like, oh no, we're not going to put that as part of scope. We're going to take it offline. We're going to remediate that straight away. And so it optimizes your bug bounty. So you're getting more value. So you're getting the higher value bugs, you know, the crazy bugs that the real top bug hunters find, you know, that are chaining different vulnerabilities together, you know, the stuff that you really want to know and that you really have to pay out, right? Yeah. You don't want to pay out, you know, a bunch of nonsense, right? You're not optimizing your bug bounty spam.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we had this discussion before I hit the record button, but, and it'll make you gag, right? But this is kind of next gen vulnerability scanning, right? Like that's maybe one way to think about it.
It is, you know, one of the things that, especially working with bug bounties, right? You have to work with how companies operate today and how they develop their applications, how they deploy their infrastructure today, and all of the controls and all the protections that they have in place currently. Otherwise, you're not going to be successful. Otherwise, you're not going to get paid. One of the common mistakes that people make is that they think of bug bounties like a pen test, right? And they approach it in that same way. And one of the things that, you know, we did was really think about it in a different way and say, well, how are companies actually developing their assets? You know, do they have a good handle on what's actually out there? Can we find stuff that they don't know about or that's being actively developed right now or stuff that exists for a short period of time? And can we capitalize on that? And what are the issues that we want to find and how quickly can we do it? And can we be first? And that's really formed, you know, the sort of the genesis of Asset Note is taking those principles and, you know, applying it in a way that, you know, companies can get value out of it, not just us as bug hunters, right? Companies can get a handle on it themselves and, you know, can derive value from, you know, looking at things continuously and looking at things holistically.
Now, we've got one hell of a call to action to end this segment on, which is that if, you know, companies are interested in this technology, you're happy to actually demo it across their assets. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's one of the great things, right?
While they're still a small startup, because I think you're going to get inundated by people who want to actually take you up on that one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. More than happy to run this against companies so they can see what's out there. And, you know, it's a great way to kick off the conversation.
So there you go, assetnote.io. Links in the show notes for this podcast. Michael Giannarakis, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Pat.
Okay, so there you go, assetnote.io, and some of my CISO pals will be hearing from me directly on that one. But yeah, if you're a major online brand, I'd say straight up, just buy it now. If you're a financial services firm trying to manage vendor risk or get a measure on vendor risk, I think, you know, it's a good buy. And anyone with a serious cloud footprint should absolutely take a look at this, assetnote.io. Okay, it is time for our second vendor in this Snake Oilers edition. The company is Inquest, and the speaker is Inquest's very own Pedram Amini. Now, this is an interesting tech. Inquest makes a box that Pedram says is used by the type of organizations that have three of everything. This technology began life at the Pentagon, and it's a really interesting way of detecting client-side attacks, but over the network. You can deploy it a few different ways. You can feed it raw packets behind your SSL terminator or plumb it in with ICAP. You know, so there's multiple ways of getting data to this machine, but the idea here is that it will take the raw data and reassemble it into files. After reassembling these files, the Inquest tech breaks them down to analyze them. Modern-day malware is commonly nested in multiple levels of compression, embedded in complex PDF object streams, or buried within JAR files. If your network monitoring infrastructure can't decode multiple nested levels, then most advanced malware is likely getting through to your end users, or at least to your endpoints, and then do you really want to rely on your endpoint detections to pick it up? The Inquest kit can also feed these files off to multiple AV scanners or even cloud services. So it's a tool for serious SOCs. It's not a primary control, rather it's designed to fill in some significant gaps really, really nicely. So yeah, Inquest does what they call deep file inspection on top of deep session or packet inspection. The whole idea is to augment client-side, host-based, and network-based controls, and it's for SOC teams who want to augment their detection and prevention capabilities and use something like this for threat hunting. Pedram Amini joined me to talk about Inquest, and here's what he had to say.
In a typical types of attacks that we're dealing with, and you know, we've been looking at this problem for a long time, space. Like we've seen the common malware carrier issue being client-side attacks. This is the last place where vulnerability is going to die. So your browser-based attacks, your file-based attacks, like your Adobe documents, Office documents, you know, your JAR files, your Swift applets, You know, so since maybe back in 2010, this is a problem that we've seen as network operators and something that we've put our focus on. And so that's really where the product shines, is you give us these atomic packets, and then we're going to give you a very high-level picture of what you have going on at layer 7, including what's inside those files.
Well, and that's why you say layer 7 and beyond, right? Which is a nice little marketing tag, but it's kind of, you know, I'll allow it because it's true. I mean, you're doing stuff like you're like decompiling flash files and pulling apart jars and like really looking at what's in them, right?
That's correct. So, you know, whatever I refer this to as like encapsulation or your Matryoshka doll. And it's an arbitrary nesting. You know, I've seen, you know, real world malware campaign samples where a zip file is being sent in an email and that zip file is password protected. And the password is written in an obfuscated fashion in the email body. Once you open that, you've got a document. You double click on that document. Inside there is another document. You know, whereas before in the past, this kind of like level of user interaction was frowned upon by malicious actors. Now, with the advent of all the myriad of automated tools out there, actually layering your attack in such a fashion where it's going to take, you know, some severe or significant human interaction to get it to open is a viable option for attackers. So we'll go through all that steps, right? We will decrypt that zip file based on the contents of the email, and then we'll take that document and pull out the document inside there. And if there's a flash applet, we'll decompile that. If there's a macro, we'll decompress, deobfuscate, and expose that bare as well. So in essence, this, as we call it, deep file inspection layer, is taking your deep packet inspection, deep section inspection, and throwing another marketing term on top of it, deep file inspection, to get at the core guts of what's in these files. And we automate all that so that the SOC analyst can worry about writing, you know, threat intel signatures without having to deal with the nuances of this, you know, myriad of encapsulation techniques that can be employed by attackers.
So I'm guessing your team has spent, you know, most of its life writing parsers for this thing, right?
It's an ongoing and ever-changing workflow. Yes, it's a big part of what we do. You know, I'd say that our capabilities are split into our ability to do data capture without packet loss, and then our ability to expose the content and provide visibility on top of it. And then finally, our third pillar is the threat intelligence. And, you know, we're not just looking for specific types of malware. You know, our rules are designed to be generic, and they pair and heat and cool when they're seen together, so that we're essentially building up a picture the same way that a SOC analyst would when he's looking at all these different indicators underneath a single pane of glass. You know, we show everything and we automate what we can in order to reduce the amount of time, reduce alert fatigue, and allow the SOC analyst to do what he does best, you know, applying human cognition where it matters.
Now, of course, you're not pitching this as, you know, you are pitching this as a mechanism for detecting client-side attacks, you know, file-based attacks, whether they're coming in through web or email or whatever, right? But you're not pitching this as an alternative to client-side protections that actually run on the host, like AV, EDR, whatever. This is for people who are already doing that, right?
That's correct. I mean, and in general, as a security practitioner, unless you're just a full-blown marketing-type background, it's just a foolish thing to say. I mean, there's a long-standing necessity for defense in depth. And in some of these higher, you know, echelon, more sensitive environments, they're essentially doing everything in triplicate. You throw three of everything at the problem. You know, this is a commonality that we use as well. Like, we throw everything in the kitchen sink at the problem of detecting malicious content. We're not a replacement for endpoint. We augment endpoint. You know, from our perspective, it's important to look at things from all angles. You're looking at, you know, server logs that are aggregated. You're looking at endpoint heuristics that are coming together. You're looking at network-based things, everything combined to provide a full picture.
Now, of course, you know, detection is just one part of this. You find that your customers really use this as a threat hunting solution, you know, in a pretty major way, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, we touch on three pillars: prevention, detection, and threat hunting. And potentially, and, you know, arguably, the threat hunting is among the bigger facets of what we offer. You know, for anybody who's familiar with the VirusTotal's intelligence services, which any vendor that has been on your podcast that has dealt with malware will be familiar, we're providing that kind of service for our customers on-premise. So we take all these files that we're capturing and the dissection that we do, and regardless of good or bad, we store them and we allow the user to use Yara-compatible signatures to hunt across this corpus of content. You know, in many cases, pivoting and writing new signatures that will find other otherwise unforeseen attacks. So, you know, prevent what you can, detect what you can, but then provide the data platform to discover truly the most interesting breaches, which is what you get when you filter out all the other white noise.
Now, of course, you know, one of the features about of this thing that I like is that you could actually start carving off these files and sending them to like multiple scanners, right? And that's something your endpoint, you know, software can't do. You're going to have one AV agent, not, you know, 10 engines. And, you know, being able to take stuff off the wire and throw it at like 10 engines if you want to, that's something you can do, right?
That's correct. You know, we, in addition to the data capture and then this artifact extraction where artifacts are, you know, domains, URLs, email addresses, IP addresses, and predominantly and most importantly, files, you know, we have implemented somewhat of a security MapReduce. You know, once we've extracted these artifacts, they in parallel go out to all of the onboard components. So our deep file inspection, our machine learning layers, our signature running engine, signature scanning engine, sorry. And then any optional integrations as well. So as an example, if you have an OpsWatt appliance on-premise, you know, OpsWatt is a multi-AV provider, similar to VirusTotal, but it's in a box on your own network. So you don't have to worry about sending sensitive content up to the cloud. You know, we can communicate with the OpsWatt box. If you have a VirusTotal API key, we can send hashes up there. If you have a sandboxing environment such as Cuckoo, Joe, VMray, FireEye, now also Falcon, the VXStream has been purchased by CrowdStrike. We support all those as well. And each collector can connect to multiple of these things. And you can use things like MIME rules and host rules to send different things to different endpoints. And in the end, the map, you know, this is the mapping it out. The reduced portion of it is we'll ingest all those results automatically and intelligently.
Yeah, okay, ingesting is one thing, and you talk about single pane of glass, and that is the marketing catch cry of 2018, let me tell you. But I mean, is it the case that you're actually looking at an Inquest console for this, or are you feeding back into SIEM?
So we actually, all these tools can be wrapped up underneath us. We will feed all the alerts to a SIEM after we've processed it. And the reason for that is because we can apply filtering and logic on top of it. You know, I've been looking at the results of multi-AV for 20 years. So I can tell you right off the bat, like half the AV engines are going to be weighted down to zero. For the remaining ones, we have all sorts of nuances for name-based weighting and name-based elimination. So we want to provide a layer, just like the SOC analyst does, to reduce this kind of alert fatigue, right?
But I guess so what I'm asking is, are you a console or are you an API?
We are a console. We will consume. So if, as an example, if you have your OpsWatt integration, that box would sit side by side to ours and all the results that went through it would be seen through our eyes only, if that makes sense.
You're actually presenting this data to users in your own interface.
That's correct. So if, yeah. At the end of the day, when a SOC analyst logs into our manager appliance and or our manager instance and is searching for network sessions of interest, when they're looking at the session details pane, what they're going to see is a threat score from 0 to 10, and then they're going to see, and this is somewhat unique to us, the threat receipt. We have something like 15 or 16 contributors. You know, some of them are third-party, like OpsWatt multi-AV, VirusTotal multi-AV, sandbox results. The other ones are on-premise, so things like our own reputation, our scanning engine, you know, our heuristics engine, our machine learning engine. And so the analyst will actually be able to see right at a quick glance, okay, this is an 8 out of 10, and the reason for it is because of the 15 subsystems that we have, you know, 12 of them, you know, had some value to add. These three were not factored into the threat score because we don't want to artificially inflate scores just because everybody thinks something is bad just means it's garden variety. Doesn't mean that it's, you know, it's a 10. So we, you know, that's part of the trick there as well is an intelligent threat scoring algorithm that takes into consideration, you know, like SOC experience.
And I'd imagine you can take this information if people want to ignore your interface and just pump it into whatever else they're using, they can do that as well?
That's absolutely correct. You know, in all the environments that we're in, a SIEM is going to be the primary pivot point. So our alerts that we produce based off of what we see, what we capture, what we analyze, and any of the integrations that we work with, we'll encapsulate that all down into an alert stream that goes into the SIEM so that it can be aggregated with other events from your endpoint or from other devices. And then typically what will end up happening is the person will pivot into our box and start from there.
Dive into it a bit further, right? That makes total sense. Now, look, you've described a technology here where, you know, you're talking about environments that have three of everything. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that means defense.
The original inception of this product actually came out of the Pentagon. So my partner and initial company founder, He ran the PentCert for, that's the Pentagon Computer Incident Response Team, for almost 20 years. You know, their mission was secure pipe. You know, the Pentagon is the largest physical office in the world. It's arguably the, you know, one of the highest asset values in terms of the kind of threats that you're going to see there. And their job was to provide a secure pipe. So as part of that mission, they put together a collection of both, commercial off-the-shelf tools, open source tools. And, you know, despite all the time and tuning and manpower, there was still something left to be desired in by way of visibility. You know, back in even 2010, when we saw the how the malware carriers, the common client-side malware carrier, was really going to be the continued point of success for malicious actors. Without this deep file inspection engine, it's very, very difficult from a network perspective to get visibility into these things. Today, we're in a couple dozen sites worldwide. We are, the Department of Defense, through DISA, made this initiative known as the Joint Regional Security Stack, where they essentially went to Army, Navy, Air Force, IC, everybody, and they're like, we need to get together and come up with a single common stack so that we can trade tools, techniques, people, procedures, everything across it. And so this Joint Regional Security Stack is now the backbone for defense for all these agencies globally, CONUS, OCONUS, all over the planet. You know, so our devices, you know, are deployed alongside other vendors in this stack. We're looking at over 2 terabit of data a second across the entire Department of Defense. So, you know, really, it's a big facet of what we do, you know, a big point of our pride in defending those networks.
All right, Pedram Amini, thank you very much for joining us to talk about, the technology you make over there at Inquest. It's very interesting stuff.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
That was Pedram Amini there from Inquest, and you can check them out at inquest.net. And I thoroughly enjoyed that conversation, I've got to say. Now, on to our third and final Snake Oiler slot this time around, and we're speaking with Omaru Maruatona of Aculus. Omaru has a pretty amazing resume. He worked in a diamond mine as a systems engineer before he joined Westpac Bank here in Australia to investigate applying machine learning to internet banking fraud detection. Through that project, he actually wound up with a PhD, which is literally in applying machine learning to online bank fraud. So after Westpac, he went to work for Computershare, the share registry, before doing a stint at PwC as a penetration tester and working on security design and architecture. Now he's running Aculus, a new startup that applies machine learning to API calls. Now you might be satisfied that your API gateway is doing a top job and has got all bases covered, but I can tell you right now, there are a lot of people out there looking for some more serious protection. And that's what Aculus is all about, doing the things your gateway can't. The pitch is very simple. It uses machine learning to spot anomalous API calls and to block them. Here's Omaru.
Almost every organization that has external APIs, those APIs are authenticated and authorized at a gateway. And beyond the gateway, once the API has been authorized and authenticated, the API call then gets into the company and gets the data that it's meant to get. The problem with that approach is we've seen through the Verizon data breach report that authentication bypass attacks in general are increasing. And this was mainly due to the rise of external APIs. And that means that there is a problem with current approaches to API security. And so what Aculus provides is a solution that sits beyond or behind the API gateway and uses machine learning, deep learning, and behavioral analytics to rescreen an incoming API call to detect credential theft, to detect unauthorized use, and to detect if an API call is being called for the wrong reasons. So
yeah.
What we provide to a business is loss prevention. So financial loss, reputational loss, and effective risk management is what we are about.
I think the whole thing here is predicated on the fact that, and tell me if I'm wrong, it's predicated on the fact that API calls, by and large, if you look at them in aggregate, they're kind of quite predictable, right? Which means this is a sensible application for machine learning.
Absolutely. Definitely, yeah. But also, if the way we're doing our screening and assessment is multi-stage. There's three stages, three distinct phases where the first thing we do is look at the IP address of the caller, right? So you've got a customer who usually uses this IP address or this device to make that call, and all of a sudden they're using this device. So that's the first thing we do.
I mean, that's a pretty simple thing, right? Like exactly. Just watching for those sort of switches. Yeah.
Which is why if somebody's using an IP address that is known for bot activity and all sorts of illegal activity, you know, it would be a bit amiss to try and look for other things having overlooked that. So it's the best place to start, essentially. And then we then look at the API payload. We do some anomaly detection on the API payload features. And then we look at the API call details or the transaction details, which is where we use behavioral analytics and deep learning to then aggregate those three distinct phases and say, you know, from a risk index between 1 and 9, this is where your exposure is with this particular API call.
So which types of APIs are you applying this to? Because, I mean, an API, it's like, you know, it can be as broad as saying a web application. You know, there's very, very simple APIs. There's very, very complicated APIs. Where are you finding you're having the most success or, you know, adding the most value?
At this point, I'd say any API calls, particularly external ones, where customer data is at stake, where a financial transaction is at stake. That's where we're focusing on. And currently, the customers we have, that's sort of where the space that they see best value for our solution.
So what sort of things are you flagging on? I mean, can you give us a few examples of the types of things that your system will flag?
Yeah. So one of the things, I'll give you a few. One is at a call that is being repeatedly made in the space of, let's say, in a minute, you get the same call from the same address 6 times. And it could be for in one instance, we're dealing with a gate payment gateway provider, and you're getting a purchase call for the same item 5 times in one minute, right? So you see that transaction the first time, and it looks relatively, you know, benign. You know, it's painless, looks straightforward. And then the same call gets put through 4 times in over the next 60 seconds, right? That's a flag right there. One of the other things that we look at is where we know that for a particular API, the end user is not a machine, it's a person who's transacting through an API. Again, people are creatures of habit, and therefore this particular call came in at 3 a.m., you know, which obviously somebody can make that call anytime they want. But the fact that that 3 a.m. call was so deviant to other observed, you know, behavior of that particular person, then it got flagged. In another instance, we had an API call where, you know, the IP address was clean, but the what was being asked for again was deviant from, you know, what was considered normal as far as that identity's behavior profile was concerned. So essentially, the best way to look at it is the more you interact with the system through your APIs, the more your behavior kind of gets, you know, grouped into a profile that has very distinct boundaries. And every time that your user interaction through an API falls outside of that boundary, then it gets flagged as an anomaly. And what we do through our system is we let the business define a hard stop, as in you get this risk rating index, say, you know, our index ranges between 1 and 9. So a typical organization would say between 1 and 4, that's fine, let it through. Between 5 and 7, do a step up or a re-auth, as in send a secret PIN to a mobile and let them re-authenticate through the mobile.
So you're actually getting active here. You're not just, you know, pumping alerts into a console. You can configure this thing to block certain API calls.
That's right. But but how you get blocked and the criteria for blocking, we leave it to the business because, you know, security is context-based, you know, a level.
Well, look, speaking of that, I mean, one of the major issues with machine learning-based technology can be false positives. What are you doing to address that? Because I'd imagine, you know, a false positive wouldn't be something you haven't seen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, you know, inherent in all learning technologies anyway. So false positives, learning, right? So there's a good chance that a machine learning algorithm will miss something if it hasn't seen it enough times. And therefore, you train and retrain and retrain. And going forward, you know, those false positives start to drop, which is why currently our approach is, you know, have our solution on your data center or connected to your endpoints, your API endpoints for a period of time where the system will be learning and collecting all that, you know, reference data to learn what normal traffic looks like, what a fraudulent traffic looks like. And therefore, after that, then we put it on test mode where we're just strictly evaluating its accuracy, false positives, and things like that.
So what industry verticals are you targeting with this tech?
Look, it applies across all verticals, but obviously the systematic thing to do, the methodical thing to do is to start with a vertical and then see how you expand into others. Currently, fortunately, we happen to have a customer who is in financial services. So that's sort of our anchor vertical. That's where we're doing most of our testing, but we also have another customer who is in, they provide a security authentication solution. Again, it applies to them, works really well for them. So without wanting to restrict the applicability of the system, we have set up our base vertical as financial services.
Yeah.
So it could be a bank, could be a payment gateway, could be an app that takes payments directly from customers.
And what's your deployment model here? I mean, you know, you're talking about actually sitting on the endpoint, right? So have you actually created software that runs on Windows Server and Linux, or is it some sort of proxy? How does it work?
Yeah, so there's two deployment models that we're sort of accommodating now. One is we've seen with some of particularly very large customers that they would rather have a capability like this sitting on their own data center. So we do have an on-prem alternative, but we do also have an SaaS alternative where if you're a bit smaller and you're happy to use a cloud-based solution, then we have that. There's advantages and disadvantages for both, but the key one with on-prem is that in terms of updating, so you want to be updating your learning models. So in terms of updating, the system is sort of restricted in that you can only update on what you're seeing on your data center.
Yeah, so
right?
You can't get aggregate data across multiple clients.
Correct.
But are you installing this as an on-prem proxy, or is it actually running on the customer's hardware, you know, alongside the API itself?
Proxy. It's a proxy.
Yeah.
And the one other thing we emphasize with our solution is that it's privacy conscious. And by privacy conscious, we mean that if you are customer X, if you are company X and you've got particular, you know, customer details that come through the API that you don't want our solution to see, we can configure, you know, the traffic coming into our proxy such that all those other features that, you know, should stay between you and your customer don't come into our solution.
All right, Omaru Maruatona, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to walk us through Iculus. It's very interesting stuff.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
That was Omaru Maruatona of Iculus, rounding out this edition of Snake Oilers. I do hope you've enjoyed it. You can find them at aiculus.co. aiculus.co. And of course, there is a link in the show notes. I'll be back next week with the weekly show. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.